Most of us have food issues. We eat too much of what we shouldn't and not enough of what we should, or maybe we eat in cycles, as in not letting a morsel of the quote-unquote bad stuff pass through our lips. And then we indulge with a hefty portion of guilt on the side. Well, in looking for answers to why we have these difficult relationships with food, British food historian B. Wilson turned to the science behind why we like to eat what we like to eat. And what she learned is in her new book, First Bite, How We Learn to Eat. Well, Bea spoke with our contributor, Joe Yonan. He is food and dining editor of The Washington Post.
Bea, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So why do you think so many of us seem to have such a difficult relationship with food?
Well, I think it's partly because we have this mistaken idea that eating is something really simple, that it's just innate, like breathing, that we're born knowing how to do it. And actually, it's a series of immensely complicated skills that some of us master better than others. But I think another reason is there are just so many ways in which eating can go wrong, and I hadn't even fully appreciated before I wrote the book the extent to which there's this spectrum of unhappy and disordered eating, ranging from anorexia on the one hand, to yo-yo dieters, to binge eaters, to adult picky eaters. And it's tied up with so much of the rest of life. And part of my starting point for the book was that I myself used to be really unhappy and out of control in the way that I ate as a teenager and a young adult. And now I feel I've jumped over to a really happy place with food. I don't associate it with guilt. I don't beat myself up over things that I eat. And the book was really my attempt to explain how this was possible. How can someone change from a fraught relationship with food to a less fraught one, which is, after all, where we all want to get?
How did that work for you? How did you change your relationship with food?
Well, it's really strange looking back to try and work out how it happened, because it definitely didn't happen in the way that all of the diets I used to impose on myself did. You know, as a teenager, when I was unhappy about eating, I was endlessly forcing myself on these punitive diets, and I'd feel really hungry, and I'd be hopeful at first, and then I'd kind of give up and cave in after about 3 or 4 days, and then I'd feel even worse. Whereas when I changed to this new way of eating, first of all, it took time. Secondly, I think it was bound up with lots of other things going on in my life. The big thing was that I fell in love with the person who was my future husband, who had a completely different relationship with food. It wasn't that he was a health nut, far from it, but it was just that he was eating 3 structured meals a day. He didn't seem to have food in these different moral categories in the way that I had done. A slice of cake was just a slice of cake, but equally, he ate salad because he loved it. And that really changed my perspective on food.
What's so fascinating is this idea that you learned that eating is something that we learn to do in a very specific way, and that it's not something that we're just born with. Can you talk a little bit more about how you came to that and what that means?
Yes. I mean, this was a big revelation I had while I was doing the research. I didn't really realize that was the theme of the book. I thought I was writing a book when I started about children and food. But the more I looked at it, the more I saw that the ways in which children were learning to eat were still there for adults, and that many of us as adults haven't, in fact, successfully learnt the eating skills that we need in order to feed ourselves in a way that's nutritionally pretty balanced and also a pleasure. And I don't think it's how we think of eating. We think of our likes and dislikes as something which is so intimate and personal that surely they must be nature rather than nurture. They must be something genetic, because they seem to follow us around like a comforting shadow. You know, our love of cauliflower and our hatred of grapes or whatever it might be seem to tell us who we are. But the more I looked into the science of it, the more it became clear that almost all of our likes and dislikes are in fact a function of memory in the brain. You know, we're imprinted with certain flavor memories from the very first taste that we take, but also environment, the cues that we're picking up from our culture, from our parents and the rest of our family about what's good to eat.
One of my favorite parts of your book was about the Clara Davis experiments. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, this was an extraordinary thing. She would never have got away with it now because it would be seen, rightly, as completely unethical. So Clara Davis was a pediatrician from Chicago, and she took a group of children who'd never had a bite of solid food. Some of them were orphans, and some of them had single mothers. And she put them in an experimental orphanage in a hospital. And her idea was, what would children's tastes look like if they were freed up from all of the usual influences and expectations? And she offered the children each day a smorgasbord of different foods. There was beets, there was peaches, lettuce, beef, chicken, bone broth, liver, salt. And there was no expectation they should eat this or that. They weren't pushed to any food. And at the end of the experiment, what she found was that each of the children had a different pattern of tastes, but each of them was able to select for themselves a diet which served them very well nutritionally. There were children who, at the time they entered the hospital, had rickets. They cured themselves. The ones who were malnourished were no longer malnourished. So the way that people have often taken this experiment is to say, great, we can just leave children alone to their own devices. There's this phrase that doctors used a lot in the middle of the 20th century, wisdom of the body. We just naturally know what to eat. And actually, Dr. Davis drew the opposite conclusion. She was aware that the biggest thing she'd done with her experiment was to radically restructure the children's environment. Of course, if we were all choosing from a diet of nothing but pure, whole, unprocessed foods, our likes and dislikes wouldn't matter so much. But in a society where a child has a choice between, do you want this sugary cereal or do you want this sugary sports bar, being left to their own devices isn't such a great idea. And Dr. Davis concluded that actually children's nutrition should be left in the hands of their elders where it's always belonged.
That led you to come up with some interesting conclusions about what might work best for parents of so-called selective eaters or picky eaters.
I was so pleased by this research because it's so hopeful. There is lots that parents of picky eaters can do. And I'm not saying it's equally easy for everyone. I think sometimes there's a kind of element of judgment that comes in. If you have children who are relatively easy to feed, you might look at another family and think, why won't their children just eat and they must be doing something wrong? And actually, it's really hard for a lot of parents. But there is a lot of recent research that's been done just over the past 10 years, both by academic researchers and by clinicians, which shows that you can really change a child's whole relationship with food. So I spoke to the director of Feeding Clinic, Keith Williams, in Pennsylvania, who works with children on the autistic spectrum, some of whom are down to eating just three foods. There was a boy he worked with who ate nothing but hot dogs, grilled cheese sandwiches, and milk. And you can't get the nutrition you need from that. And it's miserable for the whole family. Some of the kids he works with, it gets so bad they're being fed by a tube. And he found that if you could just expose the children to a range of foods that were the size of a grain of rice, they would consent to put that food in their mouth. And what we know is that because our likes are largely a function of exposure, if you can try that grain of rice-sized piece of food often enough, the odds are you're going to like it. And he did this amazing experiment where he succeeded in converting these two very, very resistant toddlers who had been on three foods up to as many as 65 new foods in their repertoire over just 2 weeks. It really works.
Bee, thank you so much. The book is fascinating, and I really appreciate your talking to us about it.
Thank you.
Bee Wilson is author of First Bite, How We Learn to Eat. Joe Yonan is author of Eat Your Vegetables, Bold Recipes for the Single Cook. And with those vegetables in mind, Joe left us with a recipe for a grilled greens chickpea and peppadew sandwich. And you can find it at splendidtable.org.